For many women around the world, the choice of when to marry or have sex or when and how many children she'll have is outside her control. In journalist Michelle Goldberg's new book, The Means of Reproduction, Sex, Power, and the Future of the World, giving women the freedom to control and protect their bodies allows a better chance to stop the spread of AIDS, create economic opportunity, and build more stable democracies. WMNF spoke with Michelle Goldberg last week about her book. In it, she writes about an intensified version of American-style abortion politics coming to Latin America in the 1980s, specifically in Nicaragua.
Well, and it's not only in Nicaragua, it's in several countries, but what we saw in Nicaragua in 2006 was a campaign against a campaign to close the loopholes that remained in what was already a very strict abortion law. I mean, abortion was allowed in Nicaragua only to save the life or health of the mother, or in cases of rape and incest, It was allowed only to save the life or health of the mother. They closed that loophole so that now you have women in Nicaragua, basically going to hospitals with ectopic pregnancies and having to wait for their fallopian tubes to burst. You know, there's been numerous deaths, and it's caused just unbelievable suffering. And the politics behind that are not just unique to Nicaragua. There's a whole kind of interesting global dynamic, whereas for many years, you know, kind of European countries and the United Nations and at times the United States, when Democrats have been in power, have been trying to expand access to reproductive rights and expand women's rights around the world. And in reaction to that, you have the Vatican, you have the United States when Republicans are in power, and a coalition of Muslim countries working at the United Nations to roll back women's rights. And basically, what you saw in Nicaragua was on the one hand, an expression of Nicaraguan politics, but also a kind of proxy war. You know, we used to have, you know, kind of Cold War proxy wars being fought in some of these countries. Now we have kind of cultural proxy wars, you know, with kind of participants and outside advisors from both sides, you know, kind of enacting policy through their allies in all these countries.
Right, exactly. Now, you write about in the book that therapeutic abortion is increasingly accepted as a human right in international law, and that's a little understood development. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think that very few people in the United States understand that there has been this series of cases at various international courts. And people in the U.S., you know, for obvious reasons, don't pay that much attention to international law. It's kind of vague. It's sometimes unenforceable. But this is still pretty significant. So a couple of years ago, there was a woman in Peru who was forced to carry a pregnancy to term, even though the fetus was missing a large part of its brain and couldn't survive outside the womb. She ended up taking her case to the United Nations, the United Nations Commission on Human Rights, and getting a ruling that her human rights have been violated. There's been other cases. There's been a case that was actually settled before the Inter-American Court on Human Rights where a Mexican rape victim was given compensation for being forced to carry her pregnancy to term, and the government agreed to pay for the child's education. In Europe, the European Court of Human Rights has ruled in favor of a Polish woman who was forced to carry a pregnancy to term, even though doctors had told her it would destroy her eyesight because she already had myopia, and indeed it did. She went blind. And, you know, meanwhile, the big human rights organizations, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, have also changed their policies and, you know, now kind of treat reproductive rights as a component of human rights law. And what this does, on the one hand, this is a huge kind of advance for many of the world's women, but it also creates some of the same tensions that Roe versus Wade created, you know, only on a kind of international scale, whereas, you know, Roe versus Wade created states that were angry about this kind of distant federal interference into their ability to, you know, set their own kind of rules and, you know, kind of create their own cultural norms. Now you have, you know, whole countries in which, you know, kind of right-wing populist forces can rail against an even more distant enemy that they feel like is trying to impose some kind of alien morality on them.